Chapter 2. Strike absorbed the impact, heard the high-pitched scream, and reacted instinctively. Throwing out a long arm, he seized a fistful of cloth and flesh. A second shriek of pain echoed around the stone walls, and then, with a wrench and a tussle, he had succeeded in dragging the girl back onto firm ground. Her shrieks were still echoing off the walls, and he realized that he himself had bellowed, "Jesus Christ!" The girl was doubled up in pain against the office door, whimpering. Judging by the lopsided way she was hunched, with one hand buried deep under the lapel of her coat, Strike deduced that he had saved her by grabbing a substantial part of her left breast. A thick, wavy curtain of bright blonde hair hid most of the girl's blushing face, but Strike could see tears of pain leaking out of one uncovered eye. "Fuck, sorry." His loud voice reverberated around the stairwell. "I didn't see you. Didn't expect anyone to be there." From under their feet, the strange and solitary graphic designer who inhabited the offices below yelled, "What's happening up there?" And a second later, a muffled complaint from above indicated that the manager of the bar downstairs, who slept in an attic flat over Strike's office, had also been disturbed, perhaps woken by the noise. "Come in here." Strike pushed open the door with his fingertips, so as to have no accidental contact with her while she stood huddled against it, and ushered her into the office. "Is everything all right?" called the graphic designer querulously. Strike slammed the office door behind him. "I'm okay," lied Robin in a quavering voice, still hunched over with her hand on her chest, her back to him. After a second or two, she straightened up and turned around, her face scarlet and her eyes still wet. Her accidental assailant was massive. His height, his general hairiness, coupled with a gently expanding belly, suggested a grizzly bear. One of his eyes was puffy and bruised, the skin just below the eyebrow cut. Congealing blood sat in raised white-edged nail tracks along his left cheek and on the right side of his thick neck, revealed by the crumpled open collar of his shirt. "Are you Mr. Strike?"
"Yeah."
I'm the temp.
"What?"
"The temp? From Temporary Solutions?" The name of the agency did not wipe the incredulous look from his battered face. They stared at each other, unnerved and antagonistic. Just like Robin, Cormoran Strike knew that he would forever remember the last 12 hours as an epoch-changing night in his life. Now, it seemed, the fates had sent an emissary in a neat beige trench coat to taunt him with the fact that his life was bubbling towards catastrophe. There was not supposed to be a temp. He had intended his dismissal of Robin's predecessor to end his contract. "How long have they sent you for?"
A week to begin with," said Robin, who had never been greeted with such a lack of enthusiasm.
Strike made a rapid mental calculation. A week at the agency's exorbitant rate would drive his overdraft yet further into the region of the irreparable. It might even be the final straw his main creditor kept implying he was waiting for.
"Excuse me a moment."
He left the room via the glass door and turned immediately right into the tiny, dank toilet. Here he bolted the door and stared into the cracked, spotted mirror over the sink. The reflection staring back at him was not handsome. Strike at the high, bulging forehead, broad nose and thick brows of a young Beethoven who had taken to boxing, an impression only heightened by the swelling and blackening eye. His thick, curly hair, springy as carpet, had ensured that his many youthful nicknames had included Pubehead. He looked older than his 35 years. Ramming the plug into the hole, he filled the cracked and grubby sink with cold water, took a deep breath and completely submerged his throbbing head. Displaced water slopped over his shoes, but he ignored it for the relief of 10 seconds of icy, blind stillness. Disparate images of the previous night flickered through his mind, emptying 3 drawers of possessions into a kit bag while Charlotte screamed at him, the ashtray catching him on the brow bone as he looked back at her from the door, the journey on foot across the dark city to his office, where he had slept for an hour or two in his desk chair, then the final filthy scene after Charlotte had tracked him down in the early hours to plunge in those last few banderillas she had failed to implant before he'd left her flat, his resolution to let her go when, after clawing his face, she had run after the door, and at that moment of madness when he had plunged after her, a pursuit ended as quickly as it had begun,
with the unwitting intervention of this heedless, superfluous girl, whom he had been forced to save and then placate. He emerged from the cold water with a gasp and a grunt, his face and head pleasantly numb with tingling. With the cardboard textured towel that hung on the back of the door, he rubbed himself dry and stared again at his grim reflection. The scratches, washed clean of blood, looked like nothing more than the impressions of a crumpled pillow. Charlotte would have reached the underground by now. One of the insane thoughts that had propelled him after her had been fear that she would throw herself on the tracks. Once, after a particularly vicious row in their mid-twenties, she had climbed onto a rooftop, where she had swayed drunkenly, vowing to jump. Perhaps he thought he ought to be glad that the temporary solution had forced him to abandon the chase. There could be no going back from the scene in the early hours of this morning. This time, it had to be over. Tugging his sodden collar away from his neck, Strike pulled back the rusty bolt and headed back out of the toilet and back through the glass door. A pneumatic drill had started up on the street outside. Robin was standing in front of the desk with her back to the door. She whipped her hand back out of the front of her coat as he re-entered the room, and he knew that she had been massaging her breast again.
Are you all right? Strike asked, carefully not looking at the site of the injury.
I'm fine. Listen, if you don't need me, I'll go, said Robin with dignity.
No, no, not at all, said a voice issuing from Strike's mouth, though he listened to it with disgust.
A week, yeah, that'll be fine. The post's here. He scooped it from the doormat as he spoke and scattered it on the bare desk in front of her, a proprietary offering.
Yeah, if he could open that, answer the phone, generally sort of tidy up. Computer passwords, Hatherill 23. I'll write it down.
This he did, under her wary, doubtful gaze.
There you go. I'll be in here.
He strode into the inner office, closed the door carefully behind him, and then stood quite still, gazing at the kit bag under his bare desk. It contained everything he owned, for he doubted that he would ever see again the 9/10 of his possessions he had left at Charlotte's. They would probably be gone by lunchtime. Set on fire, dumped down the street, slashed and crushed, doused in bleach. The drill hammered relentlessly in the street below. And now, the impossibility of paying off his mountainous debts, the appalling consequences that would attend the imminent failure of this business, the looming, unknown, but inevitably horrible sequel to his leaving Charlotte. In Strike's exhaustion, the misery of it all seemed to rear up in front of him in a kind of kaleidoscope of horror. Hardly aware that he had moved, he found himself back in the chair in which he had spent the latter part of the night. From the other side of the insubstantial partition wall came muffled sounds of movement. The temporary solution was no doubt starting up the computer, and would shortly discover that he had not received a single work-related email in 3 weeks. Then, at his own request, she would start opening all of his final demands. Exhausted, sore and hungry, Strike slid face down onto the desk again, muffling his eyes and ears in his encircling arms so that he did not have to listen while his humiliation was laid bare next door by a stranger.